Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Ryan Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 132 event, which takes place in Kallang, Singapore. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost 1.85 units for UFC 225 on our free bet, which was the Yoel Romero versus Robert Whittaker 2 won't last the distance prop. And, you know, it was close, but it didn't go, it ended up going the distance. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 132 features a 13 fight card in total and will be aired exclusively on UFC Fight Pass this Saturday morning. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass, just like every other fight, is a women's flyweight bout between Melinda Fabian, who is 4-3-2, and Ji Yeon Kim, who is 7-1-2. Now, some information about this bout is just all over the place. It's not on a lot of websites, but as far as I know, this fight is still happening and odds aren't even available. But Nick, what do you know about this fight? And what can you tell our listeners?
Well, as Brian mentioned, odds are not on this fight. It kind of snuck up on us here and not getting a lot of attention, as most of you guys that listen to the podcast could probably understand that, because, I mean, these two ladies are fairly unknown to, I guess, outside of the diehards, at least. I mean, Fabian is a girl that came from the Ultimate Fighter show, didn't really have that much success on the show, didn't really have a great resume before the show either. But to be honest with you, since, I mean, when her debut draw against Bennett did show some improvement, and I'll get into her game a little bit more. And then, of course, Kim is also now a veteran of the UFC. She's not from the Ultimate Fighter show or nothing. I mean, she's had a couple fights on the UFC roster so far, and she's lost to Putilova in her debut, but just beat Justin Kish in her last fight. So that's a pretty solid win for her to bounce back and, you know, and perform respectable. So Kim's pretty solid. Fabian is going to be considered, I guess, a lot less solid in this spot, but what you have here is a striker versus striker matchup. So it might be pretty interesting here, because I think Fabian does have some power. She's known to be a striker, but the funny thing is here, most of her wins come by submission. And if you really look at how Fabian fights, realistically, her submission game is her flaw as well. I mean, she's not that good defending on the ground, but obviously she has some submission ability offensively. But more so where it's at for Fabian is she wants to keep the fight upright. And she wants to stand and bang, and she has some knockout power. She has some nice kicks to go along with it. So I think her improvement, her takedown defense, and the work she's put in since the Ultimate Fighter is starting to show. She's going to have her hands full against Kim, though. I mean, Kim is definitely a solid fighter. And again, I think that she's only going to get better fight by fight as well. Now she's a couple fights in her UFC career. And again, like I said, that was a pretty solid win over Kish for her. She's an aggressive striker. She throws a lot. She throws hard. She has power. She's also pretty well-rounded. She has a ground game to go along with it. Technically speaking, I think she's just a better, simply put, overall fighter than Fabian. I mean, I think the stand-up game is better for Kim. She's a little bit more technical. I think her ground game with her jiu-jitsu skills are a little bit more technical as well. So it's her fight to win or lose, and she's going to open up a favorite. And this line is probably going to come out after weigh-ins around that time as well. I mean, you'll probably start seeing it hit the market at some point, and you'll see Kim being – not a huge favorite, but a solid little favorite I'm expecting here in this spot. And with that said, I think she probably does get the job done, but it's hard to have a lot of confidence because, again, I know people are going to consider Fabian kind of a can, but with the improvements and the stylistic matchup she has here, I think it is going to be a tough test for Kim as well. So Fabian should bring it, and we should see a pretty exciting fight, believe it or not, to start things off. So not sure why the UFC didn't kind of push this fight more or has this fight kind of not on the radar, I guess it would seem, but it would have been nice to know a little bit earlier and to try to get, I guess a little bit on top of it more for all of us. But that, hey, it is what it is. It's still a pretty solid fight to start the night off, and I'm going to pick Kim to win the fight. So from a betting perspective, though, it's not an easy one to bet.
And I'm going to side with Kim as well. I just think that she'll be the more active, aggressive fighter. But, I mean, both of these girls are strikers. I think Fabian does rely a little bit more on her kicking game, so she's going to require more space. And I expect Kim to be pushing the tempo and moving forward, trying to force Fabian to be on her back foot. And I don't know how much space she's actually going to give her. In Fabian's UFC debut against Deanna Bennett, I mean, that was an atrocious fight. Just a stall fest against the fence. Fabian did have one shining moment where she landed a pretty good head kick, and that's probably her path to victory here. I mean, she needs to land big kicks early and often and just try to mess up with Kim's rhythm. Because if Kim can get going and turn up the tempo, she's tough to stop. Justine Kish is a pretty legit fighter, and Kim outworked her, outpaced her, and earned a decision against her. So I think Kim is capable of doing that against several ladies, especially now that she's in the flyweight division. That's where she belongs, as she lost her UFC debut at 135. But I think Kim is fun to watch, and she should be able to push that high tempo here, and I expect that she gets the job done. I mean, you look at Fabian, and you know, her last three professional fights are loss, draw. And I know she's better than that, but I mean, not that much better than that. And as long as Kim pushes the right tempo and keeps Fabian on her back foot and doesn't need a huge head kick, I think Kim should take this. So Kim is my pick. Now, sticking with the flyweight division, we have Janelle Lauza, who is 7-4, taking on Olga Sasaki, who is 25-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Sasaki opened -365, the comeback on Lauza at +255. And right now, looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu, currently it's Sasaki -261. The comeback on Lauza is at +211. So line margins have tightened up, and there is more dog action coming in. The line was set too high as far as this matchup goes for sure. That's why you're seeing some dog action come in. I agree with it. I think this is basically your typical striker versus grappler matchup. There's no question about that. Sasaki, obviously a very talented, gifted grappling-based fighter. Losao is obviously your striking-based fighter that has some power and likes to stand and bang and has success on the feet. Does have a little bit of a ground game. His wrestling we've seen come into play as well. Offensively, it's not too bad. Defensively, though, that's a concern with him a little bit. He needs to stuff takedowns. He has okay takedown defense, but against solid takedown artists, he has been put on his back, and he's been beat that way. So he needs to improve that takedown defense and his ground game. It's still a work in progress, but on the feet, he's going to have a big advantage over Sasaki. So the path to victory here for Losa is to actually just basically sprawl and brawl and keep Sasaki off your back. I mean, Sasaki's pretty sneaky. He doesn't need necessarily to get takedowns to get your back and start working on his submission game. So Losa, like I said, he needs to just keep the fight in front of him, keep his distance, keep his spacing, and then outstrike Sasaki and punish him to get the W here. I think he has a good chance of doing so, because I really think in this matchup, Sasaki is taking it on somewhat of a short notice fight. So I don't think that's going to come into big time play here, because if I expect Sasaki to win, he's going to probably finish the job and win by submission. I don't think he wins on the scorecard. So in my opinion, it's Sasaki by submission, or Losa is going to win either on the cards, or he's going to end up knocking Sasaki out and winning that way as well. So with all that being said, as I mentioned, I do agree with the early dog action. I think the line set a little bit too high. Now, would I be surprised if Losa does get subbed by Sasaki? No. I mean, Sasaki has such a good sub game. If he gets your back, like I said, he could sink in the hooks and the choke, and before you know it, you'll be tapping. So it wouldn't be shocking, but there's just too much to factor in here, and I think Losa is going to know what he's in store for here, and hopefully his defensive tactics are well enough to keep Sasaki at bay and then just kind of outstrike him and see what he does from there. So I am going to pick the underdog to win this fight. I've been kind of going back and forth on this as well. I'll check out the weigh-ins here in a little while and see how they look, and might flip my pick back to Sasaki, because I do think Sasaki does have a significant advantage if he does get this fight to the ground. So it's one of those things where you like the grappler, like the striker. I'm leaning a little bit more towards the striker right now. But that could change, like I said, because in a matchup like this, all it takes is one mistake for the striker to get beat, unfortunately. So we'll see. But for right now, I think there is still a little bit of value on Losow, and I think he's going to probably do enough to get the job done. So my pick is Losow to win.
And I'm going to disagree on this one. Yeah, Lausa is probably the better striker of the two fighters here, but Sasaki isn't the worst striker, and Sasaki does have a pretty significant height and reach advantage in this fight, so Lausa's going to have to wade inside through some of Sasaki's length to get there and do any damage on the feet. And I'm just not convinced that Lausa is going to be able to fend Sasaki off. Sasaki, when he gets fights to the ground, he's really dangerous. He has those long limbs that he can use to really make some nasty submissions a lot easier because of the angles that he can create with those limbs. And when, as Nick mentioned, when he gets to somebody's back, I mean, it might as well be fight over. Now, Sasaki obviously has had a bit of an up-and-down run in the flyweight division. He had those really impressive performances against Willie Gates and Justin Scoggins, but when he faced, like, the elite grapplers in the division in Wilson Hayes and Jussier Formiga, you know, he lost those grappling exchanges. But Janelle Lausa is not an elite grappler in the division. So, and those have been the only guys that have been able to beat him so far. So I think Sasaki does get his ground game going. I think Sasaki probably gets a submission in this fight because I don't see him just grinding this out. He should be able to if he gets this fight to the floor, which he should. But if he does, then he should be able to finish it as well. So I would be really surprised if this fight went to decision. And my pick is going to be Sasaki. Now, sticking with the flyweight division, we have Matt Schnell, who is 11-4, taking on Naoki Inoue, who is 11-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Inoue opened minus 165, the comeback on Schnell at plus 125. Looking over BetDSI right now, it's minus 195 for Inoue. The comeback on Schnell is at plus 155. So, line margins have tightened up, a little bit more money going Inoue's way. Not really that surprised. Inoue is the undefeated prospect with a complete skill set. And you could say the same thing about Schnell, though. I mean, not the undefeated part, but he does have a complete skill set. So this should be a fun fight because you have two true mixed martial artists competing here. And it's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out because I think Schnell is one of the best fighters that Inoue has fought. And obviously for Schnell, this is going to be a very difficult test as well. So this should be fun scrap. I mean, if you look at their skill sets, both have skill on the feet. I think Schnell has a little bit of advantage when it comes to their pure striking. Overall, as far as wrestling goes and the ground game goes, it's going to be pretty close. Both these guys are capable of getting some takedowns. And then on the ground completely, they both have some offensive skill. I think Inoue's defense is a little bit better on the ground slightly than Schnell's, but overall it should be a pretty fun grappling exchange battle if we do get to see it play out that way. And then again, on the feet, I think it'll be pretty competitive. Schnell does have an advantage, but his chin is definitely suspect. And that's what bothers me about this spot with Schnell is he could be looking good. He could be winning the fight. And even though Inoue has no true knockouts on his resume, it doesn't take much to catch that chin of Schnell and drop him and put him down and give him some problems. And then Inoue might be able to pounce on the sub after that. So that's a concern for me here. I think it's going to be a really close fight. I think it'll be competitive. I think we'll have we'll see both guys have their moments in this fight. But I'm a little bit more confident in the undefeated prospect than Inoue because I think that his chin is a little bit more solid. And I expect him to make less mistakes if that makes any sense at all. I just – Schnell, for some reason, at times – you know, we'll make that one costly mistake and get him beat. So again, whether it's chin, whether it's just a mistake on the ground, I don't know. I just don't trust Schnell as much in this spot, but it should be a fun fight and definitely a winnable fight for either guy here. So it realistically, it is a dog or pass situation, but from a pure pick perspective, I have to lean with Inoue because I just trust him a little bit more.
And this fight could go either way. I mean, Inoue, if he can get this fight to the floor and put Schnell in a bad position, he definitely has the submission skills to finish it. That being said, Schnell has a pretty solid overall wrestling game, and I think it'll be difficult to take him down and keep him down. So this fight could just boil down to stand-up. And while Inoue isn't a terrible striker, I mean, he does have a little bit of pop in his hands, but for the most part, he's just a competent striker. I mean, his sister's a terrific striker, so, you know, he should know how to do it. But Schnell, I mean, that's honestly where he is strongest. He's had his issues clearly because of the chin problems and getting dropped and knocked out twice, but when Schnell can get going in the stand-up, he's competent striker. I mean, he can outwork people. That's what happened in the Marco Beltran fight. So here, I think if Inoue is having difficulty putting Schnell on his back and working the submission game, Schnell is in a position where he can outland Inoue and score some points on the feet and eventually win a decision. Now, with Schnell's chin being so bad, that is a big concern. And even though Inoue doesn't have any knockouts on his record, he could still clip Schnell and hurt him. I mean, it doesn't take much. We've seen it so far that Schnell just can get tattooed on the feet and get hurt. And if Inoue connects on something, it could open up a submission opportunity as well. So I'm definitely concerned about that. But I think as long as Schnell keeps this upright and protects his chin, I think he's in a position to pull off an upset. So I'm going to side with Matt Schnell. Now dropping down to the strawweight division, we have Vivian Pereira, who is 13-1, taking on Yan Zhaonan, who is 8-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Pereira opened -230, the comeback on Zhaonan at +170. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's actually Pereira -165, the comeback on Zhaonan is at +135. So line margins have tightened up, a ton of action coming in on the underdog, causing the line to drop like it did. I don't know. I honestly feel like the opening line was a little bit more fair than where it's at right now. I respect the early action that's coming in on the underdog here, but this is going to be a big step up in competition for Zhaonan in this spot here. Pereira's a pretty solid fighter. She's proven it so far with her time in the UFC and who she's faced. With Zhaonan, she's more the fighter that's really her best win was against Kaylin Kern in her UFC debut. So that is an issue, I think. So she's more of the fighter that hasn't really been tested. She's been fighting, obviously, over in Asia, and she's been matched up with inexperienced fighters for the most part. And with that said, when she came and stepped up against Kaylin Kern, which is probably one of the weakest fighters on the UFC women's roster right now, you know, she got the W, and she's an aggressive fighter. She's an exciting fighter to watch, and she looked pretty good. She looked like she belonged on the UFC. So I'm not saying that she doesn't belong on this roster, but as far as experience level goes, there's a big gap between her and Pereira in this spot here. So to me, I don't know. I mean, I think you have a case here where it's a striker versus striker kind of matchup, with Zhaonan obviously being the more pure striker. Pereira is a little bit more well-rounded. Obviously, there's going to be a little bit of a reach discrepancy here with Zhaonan being like 4 inches taller, but the actual pure reach is similar. They both have 63-inch reach, so that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And, of course, Pereira is always having to fight taller fighters, so it's not like this is something new for her as well. But she is always a smaller fighter, and that's difficult at times, you know. But, again, she has experience over better competition, and I feel like she also has a more well-rounded game. Pereira can get the fight to the floor. She hits really hard as well. She, like I said, she's used to fighting some of the taller fighters that can outreach her a little bit, and she's been able to adapt and perform well. So if this stays standing, I think we're going to see a firefight back and forth. Both of these ladies are going to end up having success on the feet against each other. But the difference maker to me here is Pereira is more well-rounded. She's going to be able to get the fight to the floor at times. And once she's on the floor, she should be able to score some points that way as well. So to me, it's going to be competitive on the feet. I think Pereira is a little bit stronger overall, but Zhaonan's a little bit more aggressive overall. So that's going to be interesting. So, you know, it depends on what the judges like. And you know the judges are so bad at scoring fights at times, so that's always going to be a head-scratcher. But I don't think that's going to be the case here, because I think Pereira's well-rounded game is going to be enough to kind of make the difference here. So I'm confidently picking Pereira, and I'm going to go against the early action that's been coming in on the dog here. I think, the, like I said, the original line up over 2-1 was probably a little bit more accurate, and I think Pereira is probably one of the best 115-pound female fighters in the weight class. I know she's short for the division. It's a shame that, again, they don't have 105 pounds yet in the UFC, but if they ever get that route, you know, if she can make the weight cut, that'd be a great division and a great spot for her. Brian and I were actually just talking about that off air a little while ago as well. We think that she would be a major player at 105 pounds, but it's not 105 pounds. She's going to have her hands full for sure here with a bigger opponent, but I think Pereira gets it done. I just think she's a very solid fighter, and this is probably, well, obviously kind of a step down for her, where for Exxonin, it's actually a step up. So I like Pereira here in this spot, and I think it's a favorite or pass situation.
And I'm right with you. Xiaonan is extremely aggressive and throws heavy leather, but that's about the end of where she has any strengths. I mean, she's going to be throwing a lot of strikes, but Pereira is a very talented counter striker. I mean, she held her own on the feet against, you know, Valerie Letourneau, a fighter that could easily be fighting at flyweight or, you know, even bantamweight she's fought at. And Pereira, as we mentioned, could be fighting at atomweight. So the fact that, you know, she beat two strikers in her UFC, first two UFC fights in Letourneau and Jamie Moyle, you know, just convinces me that, you know, she shouldn't have too much of an issue here against Xiaonan, even though Xiaonan is going to be the aggressor. Xiaonan also doesn't have much of a takedown defense. I mean, Kaylin Curran took her down twice. So Pereira, who has a much better ground game than Kaylin Curran, in my opinion, should be able to shoot in for takedowns if she needs to. And I expect that she would be able to get top position and ride that out. Now, obviously, Pereira got, you know, dominated in the last fight by Tatiana Suarez, but Suarez is a one of the best fighters in the whole division, potentially a future champion. So, you know, there's nothing bad about losing that fight. I expected her to lose that fight. But Xiaonan, I mean, the only way Xiaonan wins here is if Pereira gets flustered by the pace and power of Xiaonan on the feet, and if Xiaonan is just able to work her over the course of three rounds. I think Pereira is tough enough to not get knocked out. So I think that she can stay composed on the feet and land her counter strikes, because Xiaonan's going to leave openings. I mean, she is an all offense type of fighter. So, Pereira should have plenty of opportunities to sneak in there and land some really good shots or some easy takedowns. And that's what I expect happens here. But if for some reason the takedowns aren't there and Pereira gets a little flustered by the pace of Xiaonan, then Xiaonan could win. But I think Pereira knows what she's doing and is a very capable fighter and will find those openings. So I'm going to pick Pereira as well. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Shinzo Anzai, who is 10-2, taking on Jake Matthews, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Matthews opened -400. The comeback on Anzai +280. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently -525 for Matthews, and the comeback is +385 for Anzai. So line margin have tightened up again, and more action coming in Matthews' way. Another spot that I'm not surprised. I mean, Matthews, a solid favorite, makes a lot of sense here in this spot. Even though Anzai, man, he's no joke. I mean, he's coming off of a pretty impressive performance against Jumo. And before that, he actually beat Zapata as well. So he's got a 2-fight winning streak coming in here in the UFC, and he's won 2 out of his 3 fights. And that fight with Mina in his debut was a classic war. I mean, right off the rip, those guys were throwing some serious bombs. So that was a pretty fun fight while it lasted. So that's what you're going to get with Anzai, though. I mean, the guy's aggressive. He throws really hard. He's a grinder. I mean, he looks to do what he does best and just put that pace on you and put the pressure on you and get the job done. And he's a dangerous guy doing so. But that kind of probably leads right into what Matthews wants to do here, because Matthews is just a little bit better, technically speaking, in all areas. I think if this fight stays standing, Matthews is better on the feet. He's going to obviously have some length and some size over Anzai. He's the better striker. Now, as far as punching power goes, I mean, Anzai does bring it, like I said. So as far as pure knockout power, I think either one of these guys could clip each other along the way. But again, the technical aspect of things, Matthews has the edge there. I think Matthews has the edge on the ground as well. He's got a better jiu-jitsu game to go along with it. Anzai, again, he's just a grinder. He's going to look for top position. He's going to look for ground and pound, and he's just going to make your life miserable, when he's able to at times. But I think Matthews is going to be able to stifle all that, and he's going to come away with a victory here. Whether it's a finishing Anzai, I think there's a good chance he does finish him within three rounds. But if not, if he hits the scorecards, I think Matthews probably ends up, getting the nod on the scorecards as well. We'll see. I mean, like I said, it doesn't matter. If it's a unanimous decision to all of us, we don't know what the judges are going to score. We've seen that time and time again. So that's where, I guess, my biggest issue is with the judging and the scorecards. Even if it's a clear fight, a lot of times the judges don't know how to score. And I'm saying this because one of the last times Matthews was a very solid favorite, it was over Holbrook, actually. And Holbrook was able to kind of sneak up on Matthews and steal a decision there for him. It was a close fight. I'm not saying that was a horrible decision or whatnot. I mean, Holbrook brought it there. But the last time, I'm just making note that, is there real value at betting Matthews in this spot at minus 500? I don't think so. So this is a fight where you kind of stay away from it. You don't touch it. You watch how it plays out. And hopefully Matthews wins the fight, because I'd like to see what he can do and how high he can climb up the welterweight ladder here in this spot. Because, man, the guy has some skill. He's still young enough. He's only 23 years old. So really, it's up to Matthews how far he gets. I mean, how much he wants to push the issue and how hard he wants to work and how he wants to take his career to the next level. And that's winning fights like this. This is a fight he should win, and you got to win fights like that. I thought the Holbrook fight he should have won as well. Now, of course, again, that was at lightweight. He's been fighting at welterweight and having success at welterweight as well. So just a disclaimer out there, though, because he does have those times that you just expect better from Matthews, and he kind of lets you down. So hopefully those days are behind him, and he looks great here and even gets a highlight reel finish, because I think that's what we want to see out of Matthews. So the pick is Matthews to win, but at 5-1, stay away from it.
Yeah, when breaking down this fight, I kind of saw it as Jake Matthews facing a slightly worse version of his last opponent in Li Jinglong. Anzai shoots for takedowns and throws bombs. I mean, those are the main two things he likes to do. And I think Matthews, as long as he avoids getting hit by a big haymaker, he should be in really good shape here. I mean, he has adapted so well to this transition to welterweight, where he's not cutting a lot of weight or not cutting as much weight nearly. And he's actually the same size as a lot of these welterweights. He's actually going to be 4 inches taller than Anzai. He's going to be 3 inches in reach, 2 inches in leg reach. So I expect that he'll have no issues with Anzai's strength at 170. Matthews should be able to fend off all of Anzai's takedowns. I mean, the guy is always going for takedowns, but I mean, he only lands about 16% of them. So Matthews should be able to fend those off. And as long as Matthews avoids getting clipped, because Matthews' chin is still slightly questionable. I mean, it was at lightweight. We haven't really seen much at welterweight yet. But, and usually when a fighter moves up a weight class, their chin does get a little bit better. They're not, draining their body of the fluids that could potentially protect the brain too. So I think, Matthews has already beat two fighters that are better than Shinzo Anzai in Li Jinglong and Bohan Velikovic in his first two UFC fights at welterweight. So I think that he just keeps on rolling here. I mean, he has pretty solid striking, and he has excellent takedowns himself and can grind this fight out. He has good top position, stifling top control and heavy hands. I think that there's a decent chance that he can wear Anzai out and potentially even finish him along the way. So the main thing here is just protect your chin, because if there's any path to victory for Anzai, it's most likely landing some big shot out of nowhere that Matthews just doesn't see coming and getting a finish. So as long as Matthews avoids that, he should be in really good shape. Now, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Song Keenan, who is 13-4, taking on Hector Aldana, who is 4-0. Now, Nick, Where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Song Keaton, -165. Aldana at +125. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, everybody loves Keaton, man. I mean, -260 for Keaton right now over Aldana. So that tells you how, the lack of respect people have for Aldana. And to be honest with you, both these guys don't even belong on the roster here, in my opinion. So that's a little harsh, but it's true. I mean, these guys would not win fights on, I mean, the Access TV cards, the LFA shows and stuff like that. I don't think these guys would even make it to a title shot in those cards. So they're fortunate that they're getting this opportunity and this shot in the UFC here. And obviously the winner will probably keep his job. I think the loser does definitely get cut in this spot as well. More than likely, at least. We'll see. So the matchup though, man, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of strange. Both of these guys are okay everywhere, but they're not great anywhere. Both these guys have power. Both these guys are strong. So we should see, you know, some effective damage being thrown on the feet. Obviously, Kenan is the one that everybody is raving more so about because, you know, his fast knockout in his UFC debut, which was a little bit surprising because, you know, I expect better things from Bobby Nash. And unfortunately for him, his UFC career was just a mess. And that chin is just horrific. And, you know, obviously Kenan was able to get the job done early in that fight, and we didn't really get to see it play out. But outside of that, I mean, he does have some power and he's dangerous. Obviously he showed that to us. And Aldana is the type of guy that could definitely take some punishment. And, he's got a better chin though, I should say, than Bobby Nash for sure. I would think Aldana could survive some of the strikes. Maybe Bobby Nash could not. But that being said, outside of that, I don't know if this fight's going to play out in all sorts of different areas. I think Aldana has a terrible takedown defense. He does have a little bit of a sub game. Will Kenan look to take him down and pound him out that way? I'm not sure. I think he's fallen in love with the striking a little bit more as well now. So I think we're going to see a sloppy fight. I think we're going to see a fight that either guy can win. So it is definitely a dog or pass situation, but I wouldn't touch this fight with the 10-foot pole, honestly. I think both these guys, like I said, how can you trust either guy? So I'm going to pick Kenan to win the fight here, but it's not a confident pick. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he gets beat here by Aldana and Aldana pulls off the upset, but I'll lean slightly towards the fighter that I think is a little bit more stable at this point, which is Kenan, but again, not a confident pick, and it really shouldn't even be on this card.
Yeah, I'm not impressed with either of these guys. Honestly, as Nick mentioned, this fight shouldn't even be on the card. These are two of the lower tier welterweights on the entire roster. Aldana, you know, he's got some finishing ability. He's strong, but I mean, his takedown defense is so bad. I mean, even though, you know, Song Keenan, we've only seen him for 15 seconds. I mean, if this guy just shoots for a takedown, he should have no issue putting Aldana on his back and, you know, trying to get a finish from there. So, I think that there's a path to victory there for Keenan. I mean, Keenan, not impressive for the most part in any way either, but at least, I mean, he's got some power. He does have that finishing ability and we've seen him already. Aldana, you know, we saw him on Tough Latin America, but I mean, he wasn't that impressive on that show either. So I'm just not sure why he was even getting this opportunity, to be honest. You know, neither of these guys are very good. So, you know, it's a bit of a toss up on who you think is going to win. I mean, will Aldana be able to make something happen with his hands? I don't know. You know, Keenan had that just quick blast of power, and that's all we've really seen out of him. And he looked terrible in his prior fights before. And that's why I picked Condair to beat him, and, or not Condair, but that's why I picked Bobby Nash to beat him. I thought that, you know, Nash would have no problem. And, you know, he was able to clip him and finish him. So, I'm going to side with Keenan just because he's already got a win, but I mean, I don't really believe in either of these guys. I would be shocked if in a year and a half, either of these guys are still on the roster. So I'm going to pick Keenan, and I'm not too confident about it. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Rolando D, who is 9-6-1 with one no contest, taking on Shane Young, who is 11-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Young Open minus 175, D plus 135 right now, looking over at BetDSI. It is currently with Young minus 158 to come back on D at plus 128. So line merges have tightened up. It was a pretty solid opener. It looks like to be, and it's, you know, staying pretty steady. Two-way action is coming in on this fight for sure. And it's a difficult fight to call. I mean, it really is, because both these guys, you want to talk about kind of unimpressive. I mean, both these guys are just that. I'm glad that D came back and got another opportunity in the UFC, in his last fight, because he finally got a W. And I think he is definitely a pretty solid fighter. So it's not like, this isn't the case where we were just talking about, you know, with Kennan and Aldana, that they don't belong on the roster. I think both these guys do belong on the roster, but they have a long way to go as far as improving goes. And both these guys are really similar as well. They both like to stand and bang. They both have a bit of a ground game to go along with it. They both look to wrestle, and they both are capable of finishing fights or grinding you out and getting the W here as well. Now, Young, in his UFC debut, he fought one of the best featherweight prospects out there, Volkanovski. I mean, he's quickly making himself a title contender with the wins he's racking up and how dominant and impressive he's been. So making your short notice debut against Volkanovski and taking a loss, not necessarily a bad thing. So I'm not even counting that against Young, but he's going back looking at footage before his UFC debut. Young really didn't impress me all that much. I mean, he does have a well-rounded skill set. He has a little bit of power on the feet. He's a little slow to me on the feet though. He's a little predictable with the striking, and he's not confident enough. And I'm saying that because he's not aggressive enough. He needs to be a little bit more aggressive with his foot on the gas. And then of course he does go for some takedowns, and he does have okay ground game as well. So he's okay, and he'll win some fights here and there, I think, in the featherweight division. But the thing is, Young is still only 24 years old, and he's going to improve. And now that he has a shot in the UFC, I'm expecting better things from him. So we probably do see a better Young show up against D here in this spot. And a lot can be said about D as well. He's only 26 years old, and I thought so far he showed us that he's a warrior in the UFC. I mean, some of the fights, the situations he was in under with Caceres, and then Ishihara, that fight was a pretty tough fight. I know Ishihara is not getting all that much respect these days. But that being said, he bounced back nice in his last fight, and again, got his official UFC win out of the way here. And I think he's going to have a little bit more confidence now, and he's going to bring it. And with that said, I think it's going to be a pretty interesting fight, because both these guys are strong for featherweights. Both these guys have knockout power, and both these guys are predictable in their striking, and they're hittable as well. That's what bothers me about these guys, because they're, even though they're pretty tough and they have solid chins in one aspect, because they're the type of fighters that, like D, if you look at some of his fights, he's been hurt often in his fights, but he doesn't give up. I mean, you can't get rid of the guy. I mean, he's definitely a tough fighter that will look to bounce back. And then he starts actually, once he settles into the fight, he actually starts getting going again. And you can say the same things about Young as well. He's never had an official knockout loss, but he has been tagged. He's been dropped as well. So this fight's going to be crazy how it plays out. It's definitely a dog or pass situation scenario here. I don't think you can lay the chalk against D here, because I think he can possibly pull off this upset win over Young. So should be a fun fight. In fact, I'm going to actually pick D to win. I just think he's just a little bit better. I mean, if you have to compare the two, I just like what I see from D a little bit better than Young, but it should be a close fight. I'm expecting this to be another, probably, if it hits the scorecards, a split decision type of fight, 29-28, you know, either way type of situation here. So it's a dog or pass situation, and I'm going to pick D to actually pull off the upset win here.
Both of these guys are pretty talented strikers. Honestly, the main difference between the two is that Shane Young is a little bit bigger and longer. Young does have 3 inches in reach. I think Young has a little bit more power in his hands, although, you know, both guys definitely are capable of finishing this fight. And that's mainly because both guys have, you know, pretty bad chins. I mean, Shane Young's been dropped repeatedly before he ever made it to the UFC. And then, you know, when he did arrive, I mean, he got thrown to the wolves on short notice against Volkanovski and lost a decision there. Against D, I think that Young will be standing for the most part here, and it's just going to come down to who can crack the other guy's chin first. I mean, I don't think this fight goes to decision. I think both guys have a weak enough chin and enough power to finish this fight at any moment's notice. I think how this fight plays out is one of them connects on the other's chin and then just follows up and puts him away. D has shown at least that when he does get hurt, he can bounce back, he can survive. Young, we don't really know yet because we haven't seen him in that situation, at least inside the octagon. But, you know, realistically, this fight could go either way. I expect it to be a stand-up fight. I expect them to hurt each other. And I expect that when one of them does get hurt, that the fight gets finished. So I think this fight will be entertaining however long it lasts. And I think it does end in knockout at some point. And I'm going to slightly lean towards Shane Young to pull that knockout off. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Felipe Arantes, who is 18-9-1 with two no contests, taking on Song Yadong, who is 10-3 with two no contests. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Arantes opened -175. Yadong opened at +135, and now looking over at BetDSI, Yadong is actually the favorite. He's -120. The comeback on Arantes is at -110. So line flipped, more action coming in Yadong's way, and I don't necessarily agree with it. It's just another spot where it's a strange situation, because if you look at Yadong's overall game, it's another area where he's fought pretty much weak competition. I mean, he's got a couple okay wins on his resume, but as far as skill level goes and what he's going to face with Arantes, it's a big step up of competition. I know that he was able to get the win against Condor in his UFC debut. Yadong was, but that's a whole nother level here. I know, and the problem I have with this fight is originally going into it, looking at Arantes' last fight, it was up at featherweight. So Arantes was fighting at featherweight. He dropped down to bantamweight. Then for his last fight, he actually went back up to featherweight. And he got mauled. I mean, that's basically how you say it. Emmett was just beating him. I mean, just rocked him so many different times in that fight, hurt him with almost every punch it threw. It looked so weird. I mean, it looked like Arantes wasn't right. But then you look back at some of Arantes' other fights, especially at bantamweight, and he looks okay. So that was just, I think, a weird spot for Arantes. I mean, something wasn't right for sure in that spot, and it makes you scratch your head. But then again, you look at Yadong's fights and you look at how he matches up with Arantes. This is a huge step down in competition for Arantes, and this is a giant step up in competition for Yadong here in this spot. Arantes has fought really solid competition so far in the UFC. His striking's better than Yadong's. I know that Yadong has some pure knockout power, but as far as that goes, I mean, that's probably going to be his only path of victory here against Arantes. Arantes does get me frustrated sometimes when he has decent takedown defense, but he still ends up on his back at times. And that is not a good thing, because obviously it'll score points for the other guy, for the judges. But Arantes' jiu-jitsu game, even off his back, I think in a spot against Yadong here, will probably, even if he ends up on his back, he'll probably be able to scramble out of it, end up in top position, or even look for a sub against Yadong and cause all sorts of fits for Yadong that way as well. So I think this is going to be a fairly competitive fight, but I think Arantes is just going to be the better fighter, because he is. I mean, he has a skill set. He's going to be a little bit more technical and a little bit more versed on the feet. I think he's got the better submission game to go along with it. I think the wrestling is going to be fairly close. But if Arantes fights smart, he should be able to actually win that wrestling battle as well. So to me, I don't agree with your reaction coming in and flipping the line. I think it was probably more accurately set with Arantes being a small favorite, because even though if you don't like his last performance, you can't just base it off that one fight. You go back through and look at some of his other performances. And I mean, I think he's actually looked pretty good. I know he had a close decision loss to Perez, and that was at bantamweight, but his fights against Sanders and Eves before that was actually pretty impressive, and those were both at bantamweight as well. So Arantes should be able to do enough here to outpoint Yadong on the feet, maybe even finish him, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. And if it doesn't, he should be able to get the scorecards as well. So I do like Arantes in this spot. I just think he's going to be a little bit too much for Yadong. Yadong is a little bit overrated, fought mostly cans, and this is just going to be too much for him, I think, too soon. So skill to skill, there's no comparison here. I think Arantes should get the win.
Yeah, as Nick mentioned, Arantes looked pretty good in the bantamweight division. I mean, he had those quality wins over Eve, Jeb Way, Jared Sanders, and he had that split decision loss to Eric Perez that was close, but you know, he also missed weight for that fight. That's why he moved up, back up to featherweight to take on Emmett, and Emmett gave him a reality check. In this fight, I think on the feet, Yadong actually impressed me. I mean, I thought that he looked pretty good on the feet. Granted, it was against Condair, who has pretty much no stand-up whatsoever. I mean, Condair was a guy that was going to shoot in for takedown to try to hold his opponent down and win a wrestling match. And Yudong made it a real MMA fight, and Condair just couldn't hang. I mean, that guy is not UFC caliber. And Yudong, you know, landed a couple good strikes and then picked up a submission. So, you know, props to him. He honestly did look good. You also have to factor in who he was fighting. Felipe Arantes, on the other hand, I mean, you look through his career, I mean, he has faced some tough guys. You know, he's faced Yuri Alcantara. He's faced, Kevin Souza, who is a, you know, an underrated striker. He's faced Maximo Polanco, Andre Feely, and then obviously Josh Emmett and Eric Perez most recently. So I think this guy, you know, the quality of competition is so much higher than Song Yadong's. And even though Arantes, you know, maybe could be beginning to go on a decline at this point in his career, I mean, he still is only 30 years old, but I mean, he took some serious damage in that last fight against Emmett. So even if he is on a bit of a decline, I think that it'll still be enough. I think Yudong will be able to hold his own in the pure stand-up, but I don't know how long this fight stays standing. I think if Arantes plays it smart, he does try to get this fight to the floor, and he will definitely have the superior ground game. And I think that's where he wins it. So if and when this fight goes to the floor, Arantes should take over, and I expect that Felipe Arantes does win either by submission or TKO on the canvas. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have another bantamweight contest between Teruto Ishihara, who is 11-5-2, and Peter Yan, who is 8-1 and making his UFC debut. Now Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Yan opened -350, Ishihara +250, and right now looking over BetDSI, BetDSI has Yan at -493. The comeback on Ishihara is at +373. So needless to say, action came in on Yan. Ton of hype behind Yan. Of course, he's the ACB champion. And I'll tell you what, that ACB league is producing some very talented fighters. So outside of the UFC, that's definitely one of the best organizations to fight in. I know a lot of fighters seem to be happy fighting for them as well. So they're paying well. They have a talented roster. So it's not like Yan's been fighting bum competition or cans outside of the UFC. So he's making his UFC debut with solid experience coming from a good organization. And man, the guy does have some skills. So that's why you're seeing him such a high favorite. Now, he's a well-rounded fighter, but he's more of a striking-based fighter. So he's got nice boxing. He switches stances all the time. He's accurate with his striking as well. So he kind of throws his opponents off in that aspect. He's got big power to go along with it. He's kind of a slow starter, which I don't like, but once he gets going, man, he's fun to watch because once he gets, you know, the adrenaline going and he starts getting into his flow, he just puts together the combos really nice. And again, he's accurate with the striking and he could do some damage. His takedown, defense was an issue in his lone loss, but he's improved it since then. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it could be an issue for a lot of fighters, obviously, at times. You could say the same thing about Ishihara, but I think Yan's takedown defense, he actually got to redeem that loss that I'm talking about, and he did look much improved in the second fight. But still, that's, you know, an area that Ishihara can try to exploit. I don't think he will, but that's something you could check out. So this is basically a fun fight because it's striker versus striker, right? We all know Ishihara is a striking-based fighter as well. He's an aggressive striking-based fighter. And if he's mentally focused, and he's got confidence going behind him, I mean, he could cause some problems here in his fight against Yan. So this is not a easy debut. Ishihara on the feet packs a heck of a punch. And, you know, he loves to get in wars, and he's definitely capable of knocking people out. Ishihara's basically been losing his fights by getting out grinded and getting, you know, taken down and kind of controlled a little bit along the way, more so than getting out struck. But it is an eyesore to me that he did lose a striking battle to Lobov. And not that Lobov is a terrible fighter, but I mean, Yan is a whole nother level above that. So that is definitely a head scratcher and you got to look at that. But outside of that, most of the time we've seen Ishihara actually fight with some confidence and he was willing to throw some bombs and, you know, and fight in the firefights or whatnot. If he goes with that sort of attitude in this fight against Jan, then I think he can make it interesting for sure. But it's hard to pick Ishihara on this spot. It really is, because I think Jan could even probably mix in a takedown or two along the way. So even if Ishihara is competitive on the feet with Jan, which I don't think he will be, I think Jan will win the stand-up battles as well. Jan probably has route two to go to, a path of victory to go to with his ground game as well, and probably is able to grind Ishihara out that way. So I do understand what the hype is and the quality a fighter that everybody views Jan at. I mean, he's definitely a solid guy to watch in the bantamweight division. I'm glad the UFC signed him and brought him aboard. And they're not giving him an easy fight in his UFC debut. And that's how much respect he's getting, because Ishihara is usually not a huge dog, you know, to any fighter on the UFC roster. So Jan's legit, and he's going to look to prove it here against Ishihara. And I'm not going to pick against him in this spot. So as the line is right now, though, you can't touch it. There's no way you could bet this fight. I mean, it probably is a dog or pass situation, because Ishihara does have one punch knockout power and he's capable of landing that one punch. But still, that being said, stay away from this fight as well. Just sit back, watch, and enjoy. And hopefully Jan does impress us all and he makes some waves in the bantamweight division and we get to see more good things from him in the future. So the pick is Jan to get the win over Ishihara.
And I'm going to agree. Yeah, Ishihara has a lot of power, but that's about it. I mean, you go back and you watch this guy. I mean, he relies way too much on having heavy hands and just being tough. He doesn't really have that much technique. And I mean, he just talks about, you know, getting bitches and stuff when you look into his interviews. It doesn't seem like he's taking his MMA career that seriously. And it's showing now that he's started to face some tougher competition. I mean, he did get some quality, knockouts early, but he's now lost three of his last four. He thought that dropping down to bantamweight might solve his problems. And in his return to bantamweight, Quinones just outgrappled him and, you know, won a pretty one-sided decision against him. So, you know, Ishihara has not been fighting particularly well. I mean, he's still exciting. He still has that knockout power. So Jan is going to have to be careful there. But I think Jan is the more technical striker. He should be able to land at will against Ishihara. And as long as he can avoid the heavy response from Ishihara, then Jan should be in a good position to just outwork him on the feet. But if for some reason Ishihara is finding some success in the stand-up, Ishihara has a terrible ground game and very poor defensive wrestling. His takedown defense is 32%. And I expect that if for some reason Jan is even having a little bit of trouble on the feet, he can shoot in for takedowns. This guy has a solid wrestling, above average wrestling, and a very good Brazilian jiu-jitsu game. He knows how to get, submissions. I mean, he's faced some pretty solid competition prior to making it to the UFC. So I think that this is going to be a showcase fight for Jan. And I expect that he either wins by one-sided decision or he might be, the guy to finish Ishihara along the way. So my pick is definitely going to be Peter Jan here. Now, kicking off the main card, we have a welterweight contest between Li Jinglong, who is 14-5, and Daichi Abe, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Jinglong -320, Abe at +240 was the opener. And right now you're seeing Jinglong at -273, the comeback on Abe at +223. The line did climb up even higher than that 320 spot at one point, and now it's starting to come back down a little bit, which I can understand. I mean, Abe's probably not getting a whole lot of respect, and Jinglong has definitely been one of the fighters that has earned some respect as far as being an Asian fighter, making the roster, and being one of the guys that could possibly find his way to a title shot eventually. I don't think Jinglong is going to get there, but, you know, as far as that region goes, he's definitely one of the more popular fighters, one of the more accomplished fighters thus far. I mean, the guy has some power in his hands. He has the respect of the MMA community because he brings it when he fights. So you could take your hat off Jinglong. He's definitely a very solid fighter, and he's a well-rounded fighter as well. I mean, he's just not a one-trick pony. He's got power on the feet, like I mentioned. He's got some wrestling. He's got some submission skill to go along with it. So Jinglong is a pretty complete fighter, but I do think people are underestimating Abe a little bit in this spot. I know he lost to Jumu his last time out. But before that, in his UFC debut, he won a pretty competitive decision over Lim, which is not an easy task. You know, that, I mean, making your debut against a powerful guy like Lim and getting the nod is pretty impressive. And he got outpointed in a close fight. I mean, that Jumo fight was really close and competitive. So it was a unanimous decision, but, you know, it depends. Like I said, it was close enough that, depending on the judges' cards, could have went another way. But I think part of that was actually Abby's demeanor, especially at the end of the third round. You know, sometimes you gotta put on that show. You gotta play the game a little bit. And, you know, if you don't look confident at the end of the fight, that could be all a judge needs to give the round to the other guy type of situation. So I think that Abby's gonna continue to mature and grow as a fighter that way mentally a little bit. Cause I think that's one of the spots that I see is his biggest flaw early on in his UFC career. He's 26 years old. He's gonna improve. Xing Long, like I said, he's already proven that he belongs in the welterweight division and he's a tough out. So I think this is going to be a fun fight because both guys like to stand and bang. For Xing Long, I think for him to have more success, he's going to have to utilize that leg kick. He does throw leg kicks often and he has success with them. So I think that's a path to victory for him as well to kind of mix things up and do some damage on Abby's leg. Because it seems like Abby doesn't check those leg kicks that well. So we'll see if Xing Long applies that kind of strategy and works the stand-up game a little bit and see if he can have success. I think Abby's going to be a little bit too much for Xing Long on the feet. I think it'll be a firefight. It'll go back and forth. But realistically, I think Abby has better hands. He's got pretty good timing with the striking as well. And Xing Long is so aggressive, I think he's going to walk into some power that Abby's throwing at him. So for me, this is another spot where it's kind of – I could see either guy getting the W here. So it's definitely a dog or pass situation. And with the line dropping, I understand because it was set too high for sure. Because you have a striker versus striker type of matchup. Even if Xing Long is a better, more well-rounded fighter in this spot, he shouldn't have been over 300 on the opening odds. So this is continuing to trickle down and drop a little bit. And I think that we will see Abby actually pulling off the upset win and getting the biggest win of his career over Xing Long. So again, a lot of people would be surprised me saying that, especially after Abby lost to Jumo, but I think styles make fights and he matches up really well with Xing Long. I think that Xing Long is going to kind of play right into his game and Abby's going to have some success doing so. So the pick is Abby to pull off a solid upset win over Xing Long.
And I could see that happening because I do believe that Abe is the slightly more technical striker of the two. But Xing Long, I mean, I feel like he has a lot of power, a lot of confidence, and he does have a little bit of wrestling to fall back on if things aren't going well. I mean, you got to remember, the guy earned the nickname The Leech by taking guys down and just hanging on to them like a leech and just being really difficult to scrape off. Li Jinglong does have that in his back pocket, but I think what he really has fallen in love with is his hands. And while he's not the most technical striker, I mean, he has the ability to end a fight at any moment's notice, and he's knocked out some pretty tough guys. I mean, most recently, the knockout against Zach Otto was very impressive for me. I expected him to knock out Bobby Nash. But when he put away Zach Otto, I think that kind of was the coming out party a little bit for Xing Long and his power. So Abe obviously is a technical striker that is more than capable enough of outlanding Xing Long over the course of three rounds. But I think Abe's really going to have to be cautious because of Xing Long's power. I think that'll make him hesitate a little bit. But I mean, if Abe is willing to stand his ground and trade, then, you know, he might have some success. It depends on how he approaches this fight. Abe is a talented fighter. I did expect him to lose that last one because, while Abe did win his UFC debut, I thought that, you know, there were some holes in his game and, especially, you know, defensively a little bit. And if Xing Long can exploit those holes, if he can find a home for that heavy right hand, then Abe could be in some big, big trouble. So I'm going to side with Xing Long. I'm not crazy confident about it because I do think Abe is the slightly more technical striker and I hate siding with the more aggressive, powerful guy over the more technical, because sometimes that does come back and bite me. But I think that Xinglong can pull this off, and if the striking isn't going well, I think Xinglong can wrestle too. So my pick is going to be Xinglong. Now dropping down to the women's flyweight division, we have Jessica Rose Clark, who is 8-4 with one no contest, taking on Jessica I, who is 12-6 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Rose Clark opened -170 to come back on I at +130. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's actually Rose Clark -148 to come back on I is at +118. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two reactions in this fight, but a little bit more coming out of Rose Clark. There was some dog action early on that came in towards I at one point. Now we're starting to see more action on Rose Clark. So the sports books are definitely a little bit heavier on Rose Clark here, and it should be a close fight. I mean, both these ladies at 125 pounds, I think, is the right way to go. Of course, Jessica I basically fought who's who in the bantamweight division on the UFC roster. She got in a little four-fight losing skid, some close competitive fights. I mean, she fought, like I said, some of the better upper-tier fighters, and she had some wars with them. And unfortunately for her, that kind of plummeted her stock a little bit amongst the fans' eyes. They thought that, hey, you know, she's really not that good. She should have been cut or whatnot. But realistically speaking, Jessica I definitely belongs on the UFC roster. I mean, the girl has talent. And I know that she's had her issues at time, and recently it seems like her striking, she doesn't have this confidence anymore, that confidence she once had on her feet with stuff, but she's mixing it up and she's adapting her game, and she's starting to wrestle a little bit more as well. And hopefully that confidence does come back on her feet, because she is a heck of a striker offensively at least. But the issue I have with Jessica I is she needs to definitely get that head offline and move and not get clipped as much as she does. I mean, defensively, she could definitely improve. And Rose Clark is definitely going to test that. So this is, like I said, a good fight for both ladies. They match up really well. They're very similar in a lot of ways. I mean, both these girls like to stand and bang. They both have a little bit of power in their hands. Both of them like to get some takedowns. They're more than capable of fighting on the ground as well, and they have well-rounded games. So this is going to be a fun fight. I'm expecting this to be a split decision that could go either way. And let's face it, a lot of Jessica High's fights are typical split decision type of fights. It seems like most of her fights are close, and I don't see this being any different. So it'll go back and forth. I think a lot of people are counting Jessica High out in this spot. I think she might end up getting top position more than Rose Clark will in this spot here. And I think even though Rose Clark is, you have to be careful and watch and not take her ground game lightly, even off her back. I still think Jessica I probably does not get caught up in any submissions on the ground with her, and she probably maintains control and does enough to squeak by and earn a decision win over Rose Clark. So again, this is a split decision type of fight. It has it written all over it. I think it'll be very competitive. I could realistically see it going either way, but I'm going to slightly lean more towards Jessica I here. I think that people are probably counting her out a little bit too much, and I think that she's going to get her second win in the flyweight division. I know in her mind, she feels like she can make a run to the title. She strings a few, title run together. She strings a few wins together here. She can kind of open up some eyes and hopefully get a shot eventually at the flyweight title here in the women's division. And you could say the same thing for Rose Clark. I mean, you know, I could see realistically if she wins this fight and strings together a couple more wins as well, we could see her knocking on that title door as well. So big fight for both of these ladies. Should be fun. Looking forward to watching it. But for right now, I'm going to side with Jessica I to get the W here.
And I'm going to go the other way. It just seems like Jessica I has lost a lot of confidence in her stand-up. I mean, where is the girl that entered the UFC extremely confident in her ability and outstruck Sarah Kaufman en route to winning a decision? She just doesn't seem to exist anymore. Ever since she started getting hurt in fights, and it seems like she's lost a lot of confidence in her ability to stand and trade. Her head movement has been non-existent. It feels like, you know, she's had to change her style a little bit. And, you know, in that last fight, she was able to get some wrestling going and was able to, you know, scrape away with a close competitive decision using her ground game. And I think that that's probably the path to victory here. I mean, Jessica Rose Clark has looked excellent so far in her first two fights in the UFC. You know, granted, they were against women's strawweights that were moving up a weight class in Beck Rawlings and Paige VanZant. And now she's going to be fighting somebody that's her own size. Like, Jessica I will actually be a little bit bigger. So, you know, Clark could have her hands full here, but I just don't know if Jessica I has the confidence to stand. You know, she might even be the better striker, at least with her jab, Ai is. But I just don't think that she'll be able to trade in the pocket with Clark. I think Rose Clark makes some really impressive, she'd land some impressive shots along the way. I think that she can hurt Jessica Ai on the feet, and I think that she forces Jessica Ai to wrestle in this fight. And as long as Jessica Rose Clark can avoid being put on her back, then I think she's going to be in a good position to win this fight. Ai just hasn't shown me that same killer instinct and confidence that she had when she was at one point the number one ranked flyweight in the world. So I'm going to side with Jessica Rose Clark. I think that she just has a lot more momentum on her side, and we'll see how it plays out, because Ai does occasionally, you know, really make fights close that potentially shouldn't be close. But I think, this is Clark's fight to lose. So I'm going to side with her. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Ovin St. Preux, who is 22-11, taking on Tyson Pedro, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Pedro opened -120, OSP opened -120, exactly a pick'em, and right now looking over at BetDSI, it's -150 for Pedro. The comeback on OSP is at +120, so a little bit more action coming in Pedro's way. A little bit surprised. I mean, I guess a lot of people were thinking that OSP has definitely hit that decline spot, and Pedro's the up-and-coming fighter in the light heavyweight division at age 26. I mean, there's basically a 9-year difference here in ages, and I think a lot of people at this, they see the way that the UFC likes to match people up. They usually throw the young guns that have potential and talent against kind of the savvy vets that have a good reputation, and it would be a really solid win on the young guns resume. So I think that's kind of what the matchmaking philosophy here is on this fight, is you got Tyson Pedro, which is kind of the next breed of light heavyweights going against OSP, who has been a very solid light heavyweight throughout his UFC career. I just don't know, though, if it's going to work out the way everybody thinks it is. I know the people are betting Pedro. They're expecting him to get the takedowns against OSP, and he does have a better ground game than OSP overall. But it is pretty close. I mean, Pedro has better submission defense. I'll give him that. It seems, thus far at least, he's had some pretty solid submission defense. But overall, I mean, there's no question who the better fighter is. It's OSP. He's levels ahead of Pedro as a whole in the MMA game. I mean, the stand-up, there's no question. Pedro does have some power. I mean, he's a big guy, right? Light heavyweight, 6'3". If he lands on you, it's definitely going to hurt. But as far as OSP goes, I mean, OSP is a level above Pedro for sure in the stand-up aspect of things. And I think OSP will hurt Pedro if it stays standing on the feet. So Pedro definitely has to get this fight to the ground if he's going to have any success. And then once on the ground, I could realistically see OSP having top position as well. And even though Pedro's good on the ground, if OSP maintains top position, I think that he'll have his way with Pedro on the ground as well. Drop some ground to pound, control a little bit, and then possibly even finish Pedro on the ground. It won't be easy to do, but I think OSP could possibly do that as well. So I could see this playing out several different ways, but most of the ways it plays out, OSP probably comes out ahead. So I don't agree with the action coming in Pedro's way. I do see the talent. I just think he needs to progress his game a little bit more so to face or beat a guy like OSP, and he hasn't done that yet. He's getting better fight by fight. He's getting that experience, but he's just too raw still for me to kind of have faith enough to believe that he's going to beat a solid light heavyweight like OSP. So I know that, you know, again, you got to be a little bit concerned. OSP did get submitted in his last fight by Latifi, but he got rocked in that fight. He got hurt. I don't think Pedro's going to have the same circumstances here, the same situation here. I think OSP's probably going to end up hurting Pedro, if anything. And if that's the case, then OSP's going to eventually get the win here. So I'm going to side with the underdog here in OSP. I think he's just a little bit better at this point, at this stage of the game.
And I'm right with you. Yeah, OSP didn't look so hot in his last fight, but he was facing one of the better fighters in the division and somebody that had already defeated Tyson Pedro handily, too. So I think that in this battle between OSP and Tyson Pedro, that, you know, Pedro is, you know, getting a little bit too big for his britches. It seems like he's a good fighter, but not a great fighter. And I think, that Pedro, when he can take people down and he can work them over on the ground with ground and pound and submission attempts, he's in great shape. But if he can't get the takedown, I think he's going to be in huge, huge trouble. And I just don't know if he'll be able to take down Ovin St. Preux. On the feet, Pedro is exposed. He really does not have much of a stand-up game. He does not have very fluid striking ability. And, I mean, you saw that against Khalil Roundtree. I mean, he got rocked in that fight, but then was able to get the fight to the floor. Roundtree is a terrible ground game, and Pedro was able to get the finish. So, you know, that was great for him, but it also showed that his stand-up is a huge liability. And Ovensting Prue, I mean, that guy has nasty killer head kicks. He has a heavy left hand. If either of those connect, I think Pedro is going to be in huge, huge trouble. And you got to remember, you know, St. Preux has faced plenty of wrestlers. I mean, there have been guys that took the fight to the floor and beat him there, like Ryan Bader and Glover Teixeira. But he's faced other wrestlers that he destroyed, like Patrick Cummins, Corey Anderson. So it just depends. Is Tyson Pedro's wrestling good enough at the Bader or Teixeira level? Is his ground game at that level? And I don't think it is. I think Pedro is more of a mid-tier guy in the light heavyweight division. I don't really see him as being a big player for the belt. And while, you know, Ovensting Prue isn't quite there either, he's, you know, more of a gatekeeper role. I think that he keeps the gate shut here and, stuffs enough takedowns to open up opportunities to land heavy shots. And I think, the finish will happen at some point, and Ovensting Prue will be the finisher. I think he wins by knockout. Potentially second round, or maybe even the first, if he stuffs enough takedowns and frustrates Pedro into a stand-up and brawl. So my pick is going to be Ovensting Prue. Now this brings us to the main event of the evening in the welterweight division. We have Donald Cerrone, who is 33-10 with one no contest, taking on Leon Edwards, who is 14-3. Now Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
A sportsbook opens Cerrone the favorite -155. The comeback on Edwards at +115. That's not a mistake. That was accurate. A Cerrone open as a favorite -155. Edwards at +115. I'm repeating that because right now you're seeing Edwards at -210. The comeback on Cerrone at +165. So needless to say where the action came in early on. And obviously for most people that follow the sport, I know Cerrone is a very popular fighter. We all know what kind of legend he is in the UFC and what his resume holds. So there's no question why I think a lot of people would think he was a rightful favorite coming into this fight. And hey, he could win his fight. And if he does, then they're going to look pretty smart doing so. But regardless, this was definitely a mistake, and Edwards should be the favorite in this point. And this is 2018. It's a spot where Cerrone, even though he's coming off of a pretty solid win over Medeiros. Before that, you know, he's obviously suffered three in a row. He's a decline fighter. He moved up to 170 pounds. I get it. He has some success, but all of a sudden he doesn't look like the same Cerrone. He does look a little bit worse to me. He looks like he is a declining fighter despite the win over Medeiros. And I don't think we're going to ever see Cerrone fighting at that peak prime, you know, that warrior that Cerrone once was. I think he's a lot more susceptible right now to solid strikers, and Edwards is just that. He's a very solid striker, has a ton of power. Edwards is more well-rounded than that as well. I mean, of course, we know he has got good wrestling. He's got a good ground game to go along with it. But it's his knockout power that's going to come into play here against Cerrone, because I think even though he's been liking the takedown game and getting takedowns, he's got to be cautious taking Cerrone down, because Cerrone is definitely the more technical fighter out of the two, and he's a more well-rounded fighter. There's no question about that. So if this plays out on the feet, I think we'll see both fighters having a little bit of success. Because if one thing that bothers me about Edwards, his strike defense can definitely improve a little bit. He's a little bit too hittable for my liking. Now he's tough. He's got a solid chin, but he's been rocked. He's been hurt before in fights, and it's been obvious. So Cerrone, you can't take lightly even on the feet. I know this is a spot for Edwards that he thinks, you know, he's the young blood. He's a new breed. You know, again, another one of those spots where they're matching that young gun against a savvy vet that's an accomplished veteran that will look good on the young guy's resume. And that's exactly the situation here. But time and time again, you cannot count a savvy vet like Cerrone out. I mean, cause he is dangerous in all aspects of the game. So if this takes place on the feet, Edwards has to be cautious. He cannot take Cerrone lightly, but I think he will win the stand-up exchanges, and he is the more capable knockout artist at this point. And I think he will probably end up hurting Cerrone on the feet and possibly finishing him off. If it plays out on the ground, Edwards, if he can stay out of submission trouble and maintain top control and kind of grind Cerrone out along the way, it's going to be pretty impressive, but I don't think he wants to play that route. I don't think he wants to go that game and play that type of game with Cerrone. You don't want to do that. You want to end up, like I said, in this particular matchup here, I think he needs to kind of focus on the stand-up game and his defense and try to light Cerrone up on the feet more so than anything else. So a tough spot, especially where the betting line is now at 2-1. I mean, it should be kind of a no-brainer to me where Edwards is the right side, but just too much risk involved with the attributes that Cerrone brings to the table with the skill set that he has. And if Edwards takes him lightly or makes one mistake, he could find himself getting tapped here in this spot. So I'm going to pick Edwards to win, but I am going to approach this fight with caution because to me, like I said, it's kind of a no-brainer at this point. I think Edwards should win this fight more times than not over Cerrone, which is a declining fighter in many ways, in my opinion, where Edwards is kind of on the rise. But this is the kind of sleeper spot that you got to be careful about and you can't be overconfident about in a situation like this. So the pick is going to be Edwards for me. I think he probably does finish Cerrone, but he definitely has to be careful. And I'm not going to exactly count Cerrone out all the way at this stage of his career either. I mean, he's got all that experience against high caliber competition at lightweight, at welterweight now as well. So you can never count the guy out. But I think he does get beat here in this fight.
Styles make fights, and I just think that Donald Cerrone is a bad matchup for Leon Edwards. Edwards entered the UFC as a very dangerous striker, but when he got out-grappled in a couple of his losses, he adapted, and he added a lot of wrestling to his game, and that actually became his biggest strength. He worked on it so hard that, you know, his wrestling is probably the attribute in his skill set that's going to carry him. It's what's helped him earn so many victories in a row. He is currently on a 5-fight win streak in the UFC welterweight division. It's one of the longest streaks. And he has some quality wins in there. I mean, Vicente Luque, that is a big time win. Albert Tumenov was impressive. Most recently, he got one of the latest finishes in UFC history at like 14 minutes, 59 and a half seconds. Getting a TKO over Peter Sabata, who is a savvy veteran. Edwards, when he gets takedowns and gets top position and works his opponents over, he's in good shape. That being said, is he really going to get takedowns against Cerrone? And Cerrone has excellent takedown defense. And if he does get taken down, I mean, he has a very scary submission game. And it's not just submissions he throws at his opponents. I mean, he can trap them in things. He sweeps, I mean, I'm just reminded by Miles Jury when Jury came out of the gate really looking to take Cerrone and put down and put him on his back and work his Jury Jitsu that he always hypes up. And Cerrone just locked him up in an omoplata and started, you know, folding him up like a pretzel and just beating him up. So, you know, and then Jury abandoned that game plan completely. Is Edwards going to be able to take Cerrone down and keep him down while avoiding Cerrone's really dangerous ground game? I mean, you got to remember, as dangerous as Cerrone's striking has been in the latter half of his UFC run, he didn't get a knockout win in MMA for a long time, and most of his wins are by submission in his career. So that's definitely something that Leon Edwards is going to have to be careful about. Now, when people have beaten Cerrone recently, it's because they've been superior technical strikers and they've been able to land really good counter shots on the feet. Like, you know, Jorge Masvidal landed some just beautiful hands and hurt Cerrone multiple times. Darren Till landed a stiff 1-2 combination that hurt Cerrone. Does Leon Edwards have that ability? He has the power, but does he have the technique? I'm not convinced. You know, Edwards does have a bit of a porous defense, and Cerrone, he can eat up powerful guys for lunch. I mean, he's done it repeatedly in his career. I mean, he just did it in his last fight against Medeiros. He's done it against Matt Brown. He's done it against Rick Story. He's done it against Patrick Cote. So if Edwards is, you know, trying to take Cerrone's head off, I think Cerrone should be fine. It's when guys are able to really find those key moments to those picture perfect opportunities and exploit maybe some small holes in Cerrone's offense and defense, that's where people have had success. And I just don't know if Leon Edwards has that capability. I expect that Edwards has continued to improve, and he definitely is a fighter on the rise, and especially at just 26 years old, while Cerrone is on the decline, in my opinion, and at 35 and has, you know, his chin is starting to go. He's a little bit slower with his reflexes. So there is definitely a potential changing of the guard moment here with Edwards and Cerrone. But I just think that at least at this point in their careers, the stylistic matchup favors Cerrone. I think Cerrone is the better technical striker of the two. I think his kicking game is going to be dangerous here. I think Cerrone can find a home for his hands, and he can hurt Edwards on the feet. And if it does go to the floor, even though Edwards does have the superior wrestling, I think Cerrone is going to be very dangerous defensively off of his back. So I think Cerrone can definitely win this fight by knockout, by submission, by decision. The possibilities could be endless. And while he is on a decline, I don't think we should be ready to write him off just yet. So I'm going to side with Donald Cerrone. I think that he does get it done here. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 132. Now, if we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.